Production. Recorded live.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Rick, and it's May the 3rd, 2010. And if you're just now joining us, I am going through the questions for this week on the Q&A. So we're glad to have you here. So the first question of the day is about limerence. Rick, could you give an example and definition of limerence? This is a question from one of the unfaithful mentors. Limerence is actually a condition. It's an addiction to some extent, but there's a part that all of us have. It's a connection mechanism that it's a way we kind of hook up with people, but in some people that connection mechanism is stronger than in others. When someone's in limerence, it's like they're completely smitten or infatuated with another person. You might even say totally obsessed with them. And in that limerence condition, they may think about that other person as much as 70 to 80% of the day. They're always wondering whether the other person is coming toward them or is kind of moving away from them. And the problem with limerence is there's such a strong kind of emotion being evoked, a chemical reaction being evoked by this other person, that there's a total inability to really wait the factors of that other person, in other words, the positives or the negatives. So frequently, if someone is in limerence, they're incapable of really being objective. So I've had people in limerence that would tell me that, you know, the other person is incredible, they're perfect. So they'll see negative aspects more or less as kind of maybe unique or quirky sorts of things that they really like. But when you get down to it, I mean, I've actually had people in limerence that are telling me this other person is amazing, and yet one in particular I'm thinking of, they did have a long history of domestic violence, but, you know, that was only because of the other person. So the person in limerence is really unable to kind of objectively look at the type of history this other person had, and in that sense, their objectivity was off. Typically, limerence will last as long as 2 to 3 years. Donald Joy says as long as 4. But at some point, the limerence wears off, and you know that then creates a whole another problem. And with limerence, even if you kind of get enough objectivity to decide that this other person isn't really a soulmate, but they are somebody that's creating an amazing reaction within you, with limerence, the problem gets to be breaking off those feelings, not breaking off the relationship. Frequently, someone in limerence, the other person may not even have their same infatuation. And so there has to be an ability to really process that relationship with someone that's very objective, a willingness to try and change how they look at that other person, a willingness to be objective about the other person, and a willingness to literally try to control cognitively some of the frequency at which they think of that other person. I mean, it's certainly something that can be worked through, but it takes time and effort on the other person's part. And
Rick,
again, as I said, yes.
This is Wendy. I have a question about limerence.
Yes.
Is limerence totally a negative thing, or is it part of the process of, you know, is it a stage that people can be in and then it can become a healthy relationship? I mean, I'm just talking about when you first meet someone and you fall in love and, you know.
Right. I think it's common. It's a common thing that not everybody experiences limerence, but certainly when you first meet someone, there can be a limerence reaction to another person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really quite natural.
Right.
But it's one of the reasons that people recommend a long engagement.
Right.
Also, because I think limerence skews our perception of another person to where we really don't have the ability to be fully objective.
I guess the thing I'm trying to say is, if two people get together and it's a, you know, there is a degree of limerence going on there, that doesn't totally negate the fact that they can't in future be in a healthy relationship with one another. I mean, is it, can
not
it not just be a progression of the relationship, I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, it certainly can be.
Okay.
I just think that what people don't understand is limerence is still just a kind of a mechanism that's within us, that attraction mechanism.
Right.
And it can be activated even if you're in another relationship. And just because it gets activated and it becomes someone that limerence gets pointed to other than your mate, that doesn't in any way mean that you're married to the wrong person.
Right.
It just means that limerence mechanism was activated and now you've got those feelings that are being created even while you're married to another person.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I think it's quite natural for a lot of people, you know, when they're out eventually trying to figure out who they're going to mate with, it happens to a lot of people.
I guess kind of the question was that was posted was, you know, understanding what limerence was, and it doesn't necessarily mean that because you were in a limerent state when you first knew one another, first got married, that it negates everything, you know, that you can't possibly be in a healthy relationship.
No, I think you can be in a very healthy, no, absolutely, you can be in a very healthy relationship. You know, you just, yeah, I know, I don't think that means that. So I would agree with what you're saying. You can certainly be in a healthy relationship even if you begin with limerence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In fact, there's some, it's kind of nice for some people to even have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the next question, acceptance. It's been about 6 months since my husband confessed to a one-night stand and several years ago early in our marriage. We realized our troubled marriage made him vulnerable, and he put himself in a situation where the opportunity was hard for him to resist. I committed to forgive him and save our marriage. He's doing everything he can to make it work, but sometimes I still find myself having a hard time believing this has happened to us. We fought a lot back then, but he had always been so open, honest, and respectable. How does someone do such a thing and not consider his wife in marriage? Is this denial? How do you completely forgive the one person you love most when you can't truly understand how they could do it in the first place? You know, at some point, I think you've got to almost accept that either the other person only is gonna be able to understand it only as good as they can, or you're going to be able to understand it as good as you can. I think the maybe what you're asking here, it's not always rational and logical. And, you know, you ask the question, how can you forgive someone if you can't truly understand how they could do it? Maybe part of what you've got to forgive is the fact that there's not a good explanation, that maybe there was a moment where they were very self-centered. Maybe there was a moment when they were only thinking of themselves. I think sometimes we think if we can understand why something happened or that it will somehow make it better, and I don't know that the answer to why takes away the pain and the grief, the sense of betrayal. Because what he did back in those days, you know, was really thoughtless. He didn't consider you at that moment. And, you know, how do you, I think you're asking a great question. How do you forgive the one person you love the most when you can't understand how they could do it in the first place. And I think that it's a gift. I think you know, for me, I pray for people and I just say, God bless them. You know, they don't get it. I don't get it. They don't get it. They've blown up my life. But they really don't understand what they were doing at that moment. I don't even understand what they were doing at that moment. But I don't want them to be punished for what they've done. I do love them more than anyone else in the world. So please don't give them what they deserve, God. I mean, it's almost like I have to decide to pray blessings for them. Because sometimes there's just no logical explanation. It was just a horrible thing to do. It was a moment where someone self-centered and selfish and only acted in their own behalf, not thinking about you. And that's the piece you have to forgive. And I don't think, you say we fought a lot back then. But, you know, I just don't think you can ever blame the marriage. You were fighting a lot back then with him, too, and you didn't go out and have an affair. And I guess there's a part of him that was able to be more self-centered than you anticipated. The question is, you know, do you want to let that go out of love? Because I think in the long run, whether you choose to stay with him or not, to me, that's kind of the issue. I mean, I think for your sake, you want to be able to forgive him and release that so it doesn't drive you crazy. So, you know, I hope you can do that over time. But it is a very, very difficult thing to do. So I'm just sorry you went through that. Attraction. Let's see. My husband told me today he's attracted to a woman at my parents' church. You say to tell your partner. He's told me also he's attracted to our nanny, one of my friends in Chicago, and my new best friend here. I feel scared. I didn't react because he was being honest, but I had fear that he finds so many women attractive and he's a sex addict. He's going to start traveling again. That is when he got into the most trouble. Also, I have mixed feelings about how passionate he is about his love and commitment to me now. He was like this before. Why should I believe he will honor his words this time and keep saying, and I keep saying, too little, too late. I thought I had this from him to start. I feel bitter. He's offering me what I deserve, and I thought I had already. Where was his love and commitment when he was having sex with the other woman and neglecting or tricking me into thinking he was unfaithful and in love with me? That he was faithful and in love with me. Why this conviction now and not from the start? You know, to answer the last question, why this conviction now and not from the start? Sometimes I think people don't see the horror of what this thing really does. And once, you know, they get into the midst of the cost, oftentimes it's the failure and the pain and the devastation that ultimately is what causes that light to break through and to create the desire to be different. If you see it as something that isn't that big a deal, initially, going through this can certainly teach you that it is a huge deal and has to be addressed. I think that you know, that one little piece, why this conviction now, hopefully he's begun to figure out that it does make a difference and it is a really big deal, when in the beginning he didn't. So, you know, you can only listen to kind of where he's at now. I mean, the fact that he's willing to share where he's being vulnerable at this point, I would think is probably a huge shift. You know, it's typically if you can expose kind of what you're tempted by, it certainly makes the temptation go down, and I would see his willingness, unless he's just mean-spirited, his willingness to share that with you is certainly a good sign that, you know, his heart is changing and he's trying to do what's necessary to stay safe. Because typically if someone is willing to share what you just described as, you know, just who they're attracted to, and they don't share that information because, unless they're just trying to hurt another person, they share that because they want to be safe. You know, you said, I fear that he finds so many women attractive. But the fact is, there are, you know, unlike many men find lots of women attractive, the problem isn't that someone might notice somebody in a sexual way or notice that someone is attractive. Really, the issue is, what do you do with that attraction? And maybe he's never even learned what to do with that attraction. I know that if my attraction meter gets pinged, one of the things I tell myself is, really, that's just about my drive for connection with Stephanie. I know it's not about my drive to be connected with that other person, but it's just, you know, within me, along with, I think, all of us, there's a profound need to be connected. And that connection drive just needs to be directed and aimed at the right thing. It sounds like, you know, the bitterness is a real difficulty for you. And I don't know if you have considered, and maybe you've already done Harboring Hope or something like that, but you know.
You're just starting Harboring Hope, Rick.
Okay, because I would.
And they're
would
in 911 as well, so.
Good, good. Because I think just kind of learning how to look at this thing and learning how to let go is going to be huge, because the last thing you want is for this bitterness to chew you up all your life. And, you know, I just say, if someone's willing to share what he shared with you, that is huge in my mind in terms of his willingness to be open and begin to move forward. So don't lose hope yet. I mean, I think he's doing some pretty incredible work just being that open with you. And, you know, as long as you know what the deal is, if he can accept that, then he can begin to deal with it. Okay, here's another question. I found my husband has been lying to me about multiple things. I also found his stash of porn, which he told me he had gotten rid of some time ago. I've been through Harboring Hope and working on myself and praying that he'll be in some sort of recovery process with me, but he's been very resistant and closed off. It is 5 years post-discovery. He's never really owned what happened. Our counselor told me that he's extremely narcissistic, and so I've learned all I can about dealing with someone's narcissism. It has put things into perspective. Sorry, my computer jumped. It has put things into perspective for me, so at least I understand it's not about me. I've pretty much made up my mind to leave him since I've not seen any sort of willingness on his part to get better. After finding the things I did this weekend, I initially thought I would continue my plans to leave then I can do so, financial issues, and not say anything about finding what I did. However, I remember you saying that something like this, that unmasked, like this, that unmasked the person can serve as a groundwork for the opportunity of recovery, that whatever, I guess, unmasked the person. Attempts to confront him with issues over the past years have been extremely negative, and I have paid the price in the way he treats me afterwards. I don't know what to do. I want to give him a chance, but I don't want to have to deal with the backlash that has always previously occurred. Wow, that's a difficult question. So to me, you can look at the porn one of two ways. And if you've already confronted him multiple times in the past, I almost look at it as from the perspective of this is just confirmation that he really hasn't changed. And in 911 marriage and relapse prevention, one of the things we talk about is when do you know that it's time to give up? And it's when someone continues to act out, they haven't moved into recovery, and when they relapse or they continue lying or whatever, it's that unwillingness to do whatever it's going to take. You know, they don't move back into the determination stage and continuing to try. In other words, they just continue justifying their old behavior. And if in the past, all he does is blames you and makes things more difficult when you confront him, then it sounds like he's had multiple issues over the past, how many years, 5 years? I don't know that I can confront him again. I would just take it as confirmation that when you can, it's time to get out. I really don't see how this time would be any different than any other time before. So, like I said, just use it as confirmation. That'd probably be my advice at this point, especially since you're five years down the road with it, and he's already lied on this thing and lied on other issues. Now, that being said, please understand that I'm making a recommendation on a specific case. That doesn't mean that if anybody finds something that they should go forward. Actually, I believe this person is maybe posted before, I've seen some other questions.
Yes.
So this is 5 years into the process where someone's not getting it. So, you know, there's a book, if y'all excuse me just a second, let me get it real fast, that you might want to also read. One moment. Let me talk for a second while you're there.
Are you there, Kevin? Yes, I am. Okay, that's good. Can't log on to the chat, though. It won't let me. Getting a book.
Okay, I found it. It's right in front of me, and I ran off to go get it. It's called, so depending on where you come from, it's called 10 Life-Saving Principles for Women in Difficult Marriages by Carla Downing. And I think Carla brings some really nice balance into some of this stuff. So if you're in a very difficult marriage, that may be something you might want to look at. 10 Life-Saving Principles for Women in Difficult Marriages by Carla Downing. Okay. That was a hard one. Let's see. Essay, 12-step groups, and accountability groups. Could you please discuss the importance of essay groups for sexual addiction and any other 12-step groups or accountability groups for the recovery from sexual addiction and why we cannot get this on our own by just making the decision not to do it anymore? You know what? Yeah, I agree 100% on this one. The problem is, and this is, you've probably heard me say this before, but Einstein says we can never solve a problem by the same consciousness that created it. We've got to have the ability to find another way to look at an issue beyond ourselves if we're ever going to get out of it. And I think that the person who's an addict has already committed multiple times not to do something again. And the reality is, no amount of "I'm not going to do it again" has ever been able to keep them from not doing it again. Therefore, you know, when you get into a group, it's like you enter, or what you're trying to do is look at it from an entirely different consciousness. But at the same time, there's another benefit to the group in that it slowly begins to strip away maybe our pride. And it allows us to think that and begin to see that maybe we can't do it, that we need help. Because until we can accept that we can't resolve it on our own, we'll never be able to move into a new solution. But once that acceptance that we can't get it begins to occur, that affords us the opportunity to find new pathways. Otherwise, until we do that, we're just going to keep trying harder and harder to change the thing on our own, and that won't work. Going to that 12-step group and being with other people who look at it differently kind of creates a heart and a mind recalibration that ultimately lets us begin to see it differently. Also, listening to the other people who are like us. That may not think they're like us in the beginning, but listening to those other people allows us to maybe gain a new perspective even through their lives. And their desperateness certainly goes a long way to helping us begin to see it differently also. I just don't think with addictions that those are something by their nature, there's something that you're not going to stop on your own. And it's not that you may not want to. That's not the point. You may really want to. It's just that if it's an addiction, you're powerless over it. And until you figure that out, you're destined to continue to repeat it. I tell the story sometimes about an addict that came to one of the EMS meetings, one of the EMS weekends, and I remember he came up to me after the first day, and he just said, "You know that, you know, I am an atheist, and I don't believe in anything bigger than me, or, you know, that, or anything like that." And I said, "Yeah, I know that." And I said, "You know that, you know, I do believe that there is a God." He said, "Yeah, I got that." And I said, "Okay, we're good. I know where you come from. You know where I come from." And I said, "I do have a question for you." I said, "You're a scientist." I said, "My son's taking chemistry right now, and we've been having an argument about scientific methodology. Could you explain that to me, please?" And he was telling me how it's about, you know, you make an observation, come up with a hypothesis as to why this is happening, you know, run an experiment and evaluate. And I said, "Well, how many times does the experiment have to fail before you disprove your hypothesis?" And he said, "Oh, you only have to have the experiment fail one time to disprove your hypothesis." And I just told him that. I said, "Well, I'm really confused." And he said, "About what?" And I said, "Well," I said, "the story you told this morning, you've run the same hypothesis multiple times in your life, and every time your experiment has failed. I mean, you're here at my seminar." I said, "How many times do you have to disprove your hypothesis before you're finally going to believe the way you're doing it doesn't work?" And he just kind of laughed at me, and he said, "You got me." And he said, "I still feel like I need to run it two or three more times." Well, for the addict, you know, to me, it's kind of like, how many times do they plan on running the hypothesis? And if you've already run the hypothesis multiple times and it hasn't worked, I mean, even if it's disproved three times or two times, that's enough. You don't have to continue to prove that the way you're doing it won't ever change it. So if we can just move out of denial and accept that we can't control it, the sooner we can do that, the sooner we can come to a place where we can end up being safe for the people we really care about. So please get involved in groups and go consider accepting or letting go of maybe taking on a little humility and begin to accept maybe you don't know all the answers. Okay, next question. This is from the forum. My husband has admitted that his infidelity was all about lust. Now I'm having a hard time when he compliments me on anything. I feel so insecure and unattractive, and it's hard to even take his words at face value. I feel like I really want to get a boot job done and buy a bunch of really expensive clothes that fit perfectly and make me look my best all the time. When I feel better about the way I look, I feel better about who I am, and then I feel like I have more self-confidence. The problem is, I want this for good reasons, but it's not just so I can feel like I'm more attractive to my husband, but maybe even so for other men, that they might notice me too, and I might feel like I really am desirable to someone else in the world too. Is it normal for the third spouse to struggle with these feelings? I want to do what's right, but this just hurts really bad, and the whole thing just sucks. What advice would you have for me on how to deal with these feelings? God bless you. You know, I can't tell you how many women, after their husbands have had infidelity and gotten boob jobs, or how many guys, after their wives have cheated, have started exercising and going out and lifting weights and trying to change their bodies. And I think that it's common. It's a really typical kind of a normal thought that I want to be more attractive, because at one level, you know, the message, you know, it certainly costs you your sense of your dignity, but it also costs you your sense of your own sexuality. The message in and of itself, whether it's about you or not about you, at one level that message is still, you're not good enough. And that's not the case. I mean, I would say that your husband was crazy to begin with, but to think that you want to go do something to give you more self-confidence at this point, I can certainly understand that, and you know, I don't know that having your body redone ultimately helps the pain. I think at one level, what you have to do with the pain that comes from betrayal is still learn how to grieve and how to work through it. I remember a group that Leslie was doing once with women, and we were both kind of talking about it, thought it was interesting. But there was one particular woman that, after her husband had cheated, had done, I think, every type of plastic surgery known to womankind, in her approach or her attempt to find the perfect body so that she could kind of increase her own self-confidence by having, you know, being a 10. And in one of the groups, you know, what she was bemoaning was the fact that there were all of these women out there that she still found so attractive that were triggering her. And she was going on and on about, you know, her husband finding other women attractive and all of these women that ultimately were triggers. And finally, one of the other women in the group just looked at her and said, "Honey, you are the trigger." Because the reality was, I mean, she probably had paid enough money to get her body to the point where it was a 10. But even after all of that, she still, her point of security, it still was never enough. So one thing I would suggest is that you'll find, no matter what you do, that the core problem really isn't about how you look. It probably has a lot more to do with how you look at yourself. And it also will have a lot to do with your ability to just deal with the pain that comes, and just grieving the loss. You know, it's about what your mate has done. I think if you wait a while and deal with the pain, because it's not going to make the pain go away to have a boob job, but you deal with the pain and you walk through that and you grieve it and you process it, that if you still want to do something later when you've got more perspective, you're probably at a better point to make a decision. I'd be careful about doing something right now because I think it's probably being motivated more out of the kind of the confused motives, as you mentioned in the email here. You know, I think there are many ways to also be more attractive to one's mate. I think that if that's what you're looking for, even though I don't know that it's, I want your mate to learn to enjoy you for who you are. But one way to be more attractive is also to focus on how to enjoy him more. When I began to really focus on enjoying Stephanie rather than trying to please Stephanie or being attractive to Stephanie, I actually, I believe, become more attractive to her in the long run. So I work really hard at just focusing on how do I enjoy her when I'm with her. And that process of my enjoying her makes it a lot more desirable for her to be with me, I think, in the long run. So one of the things I suggest you might just try focusing on enjoying him. And be kind to yourself. I suspect that God made you just as he intended you to be. And learning, if you feel really good about yourself, and if you begin to believe yourself beautiful, then in many ways, if you can see the dignity of who you are and the image of God in you and those things, I think naturally you become more beautiful in that process. I wish I had better answers on that one. That's a tough one. But hopefully that'll help a little bit. You know, it's just a willingness to go through the grief and know that, you know, if you're willing to face this, you ought to have a lot of pride in yourself. It takes a great deal of courage. So I believe that's all the questions for today, unless somebody online has another one. And since I have a cold today, I may sit there and go back to bed. I just got up to answer these things. So I hope you guys have a really good week, and I look forward to talking to you next Monday. And if you see any other good questions that need to be answered in the forum, feel free to post them. I want to thank everybody, and I'll talk to you next Monday. Bye-bye.